Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis with the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast. Today I have an interesting gentleman, Brian Cantor, who comes to us from the lovely state of Colorado. But I asked him on for the reason of his experience in going through a lot of different trading programs and being a very, very active investor. So first off, welcome, Brian.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You know, just to get started, kind of where are you from? How did you get into this stuff in that order?
Yeah, from is a hard question because I'm actually retired military, but I spent 23 years in the military, so I was from all kinds of
places. Congratulations and thank you.
Temporarily now, Colorado Springs. But I probably started investing, if you will, back when I was in college in 1987. So that was my first kind of foray into just doing the normal things, buying stocks, some ETFs. Well, there were no ETFs at the time, mutual funds and things like that. Then I got into active trading, very active trading in about 2012. And so I've spent the last 7 years in my trading education
What caused you to get into the trading? Like what prompted you? And I keep in mind, I have thousands of clients that are traders. I'm always curious as to what was it that got the hooks in?
Yeah. And for me, it was really, there were some things that I wanted to do kind of on the nonprofit kind of side that needed funding. And I realized the level of funding that I was going to need for those things was never going to come about trading time for money. Right? So I wasn't ever going to be able to get a job that was going to generate enough money that was going to be able to fund some of those nonprofit ventures. And so I wanted something that could leverage the money that I had.
So this wasn't about getting a Lamborghini, bigger house. This wasn't about getting a jet and traveling around. This was because, hey, I needed to make some more money so I could do some nonprofit activity.
Yeah. And it couldn't take up all my time, right? If it was something that was going to take 8, 10, 12 hours a day, then I was going to be able to dedicate the time to the nonprofit efforts a year.
What was the nonprofit, if you don't mind me asking?
A little complicated. I'm writing, but I also am starting a publishing company, and it's kind of a niche purpose publishing company, mostly trying to publish fiction, if you will, for, say, non-Christian audiences, secular audiences that have some Christian principles kind of embedded in them, just so that people will be exposed to ideas that they otherwise normally wouldn't have.
Cool.
I can't do all the writing myself either. I want to be able to enable some other authors that are in that market.
Very cool. Well, you know, hey, sometimes it's having something outside of ourselves that drives us. I've seen some people do really amazing things when they're doing it for other people. And then whenever they do it for themselves, they manage to step on landmines. And it's like horrible. They find anything that they could do wrong and go do it. So you got into the trading world. That's really exciting. And you decided, hey, this is something I could do on the side. Were you full-time employed at the time that you did this, or were you already retired?
I was retired military, but I was working for a defense nonprofit, Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Lab. I was working for them at the time that I got started. Since then, I have stepped away from that to be able to dedicate time to writing and using the trading to basically provide financial backing for that kind of stuff.
Dang, very cool. So you were just looking for something. How many hours a day were you looking to dedicate? Or was it even hours a day? Was it hours per week or maybe hours per month? What was the level of involvement you wanted to be involved?
Yeah. And the goal changed, right? My goal, end goal, was to do about what I'm doing right now, which is in about an hour a day, being able to do the market assessments and set up the trades. And I put the orders in advance. So they just execute automatically. I have to do that because I personally don't have the discipline to control them. But I did recognize that for a period of time, I was going to have to go to college. I was going to have to, you know, you obviously can't get trading in a typical university, but I was going to have to go to some of the education things. And so I expected to dedicate 8 hours a day to this for, you know, a good 4 or 5 years to be able to get the level of expertise that I needed.
Did you? Is that what you spent or what did you end up doing?
I did. Apart from a little bit of travel and also taking care of my elderly parents that kind of needed some assistance, I did end up putting a good, 6 to 8 hours a day in for,
wow,
you know, 3 or 4 years at least.
How did you get started? Like, where did you start? What did you do?
Yeah, it was interesting. I actually was introduced to Anderson through my first trading education company. And that was David Mitchell runs, at the time it was called DeVendra on Wall Street. They've rebranded as Tradeway now. That's primarily options trading. So that was an introduction to trading stocks and trading options, and then some of the different kinds of strategies that you could use.
I think David's been our client since 98, 99, minister down in Texas, right?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, he's got his hands in a whole bunch of stuff. Is an active minister, works with trading education, and they've recently started a space company for reusable rockets and things like that. So it's
very cool. He's not boring, that's for sure.
That's too.
So you got in there. So you went through those guys. So you're looking. So that was more option trading and a lot of just stocks, right?
Yeah. And the baseline, you'll learn in all of these things, everything trades off of the baseline, and price really is the primary mechanism that you'll use. Price and price, mm-hmm, patterns, technical charting is what you're going to use. And then if you're going to trade derivatives like options, you'll do that off of the movements of the base stock. So they teach you to trade stock, and then you can use that knowledge, apply that knowledge to trading derivative instruments, mm-hmm, like options.
Very cool. So you start off looking at stocks. What do you remember most about when you first got started?
At that point, although I had a brokerage account to where I could buy stocks, honestly, I didn't even have enough knowledge to have the kind of brokerage account that I needed to trade options. Mm-hmm. I had to set all of that up. And a lot of, to begin with, a lot of it was just simply the mechanics. I can't tell you how many bad trades I ended up making just because I messed up the order process or something silly like that, or misunderstood the charting. So learning charting, learning the mechanics.
Interesting you say that. So words of advice for somebody who's starting now.
Oh, yeah. Clearly, you paper trade. So you find almost all the platforms out there are going to give you an ability to paper trade.
Get all your mistakes out when you're not actually betting money on it. Like if you're going to learn to gamble, don't do it when you're in Vegas sitting at the table with real money. Go on your computer and learn to gamble on a simulator.
Absolutely. And that helps you get the mechanics down to learn, mm-hmm, the charting software and the platforms and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Wow. So you started there. You took your lumps. Sounds like you know, so if it, did you do okay or did you lose money? What did you end up doing out of that?
Yeah, overall I lost money, and the reason was not the system. The system that they teach is very good, and I got a very, very good education about what options are, how they work, mm-hmm, how trading works and all of that kind of stuff. But you'll find the reason that 5% of traders are successful and 95% of traders lose money is right here.
That's a crazy stat. Where do you hear that one?
In a number of different places. Now, actually, if you go to the trading education places, they aren't going to tell you that because they don't,
No, they want you to think you're going to make a ton of money.
Yeah, they don't want you to believe that what they're teaching you is probably has a 95% chance of ending up in failure. But if you look at the, there have been a number of studies. As a matter of fact, one of the articles I wrote earlier for the Infinity Investing, mm-hmm, Forum talked about the differences between investing and trading. Mm-hmm. And in there, a bunch of academic studies have gone back and taken a look at it, and then a bunch of industry studies as well.
I want to be clear. Trading is what you're talking about when people, because that's been my experience too. I look at tax returns. So I tend to be like, all right, somebody could say they're making money. Like you ask people when they're leaving Las Vegas and say, how did you do? They all broke even, right? Well, you got billion-dollar casinos that didn't build themselves, right? Somebody's losing and they're never going to really tell you. Every now and again, somebody will, I'm about broken. Yeah, no, there's certain things where you really are gambling. And I always look at trading, you better know your stuff. Investing is where you're actually the house. Then you can absolutely buy things and hold them over a long period of time. Your time horizon's very long because there's going to be blips. But historically, the stock market goes up. So
absolutely. Yeah. So it's trading that is the high risk activity. investing.
But you can marry them together too, like knowing the trading. And so it sounds to me like you did some of that. So you went in and you jumped into the option trading. And like a lot of people we see, they jump in with high hopes and then the reality is a little different. And a lot of it is the 8 inches between your ears, right? It's the mental side of it. You realize that you may have a tendency to be a gambler, or you grab onto things you won't let go. And, you know, it's almost the psychology. How much of that was your issue?
Yeah, 100% of my losses were my issue. And my issue was, I'm an engineer by training. I was in the military. I just don't like to be wrong. So I had a problem accepting my losers.
You're a guy. Come on.
And so I just was not stopping out. If I had, I went back and applied the system's stop out rules and found out that in my first, say, 2 years of trading, if I had followed my own stop out rules, I would have at least come out even and would not have lost money. But I didn't. I had a problem taking those losses.
You're making money now, though, right?
Yeah, I am. And again, a good part of that was migrating to a system that was a little bit more mechanical. So I do my market analysis now before the market opens. I put my trades on with limit orders, and I'm primarily trading the futures markets right now. And so those orders will execute without me going in there. The only thing I can do now is go in there and go, I'm going to change that a little bit or cancel my order out or something like that. So my best strategy now is just to keep me out of it, put my orders in, do the analysis, walk away, and don't even look at the computer until the next day.
And then you spend about an hour a day setting these things up?
Yeah, about an hour.
So did you end up where you wanted to end up then? Like when you first started, you said, hey, I want to help my nonprofit out. I want to be able to do these other activities. And now here you are. It sounds like you're working about an hour a day in the market and you're able to make it. Are you at your goal then? Are you able to do the things you want to do?
Yeah, I'm really pretty close to that. I will tell you that the system that I've been using right now, for me, still needs to prove itself out over a longer period of time. I've been using it for about 4 months. So I did very extensive backtesting. I backtested it over about 10 years. And because it's futures, it goes across a broad variety of markets, right? So it's not like the stock market, because the stock market has been essentially going up for 10 years. If you backtest a stock strategy for the last 10 years, it better have made money, because the market's been pretty consistently going up, right? But this is in commodities markets, stock market indices, financials, and even some currencies and things like that, right? So it's a broader range. So the back testing tells me it consistently makes money. That's based on mechanicals, right? That's based on entering and exiting the trades when the system tells you to. And so I've had pretty decent success with that over the last 4 months. I want to see how that works out. But if things work out based on thus far in the last 4 months plus the back testing, then I should be able to, in about an hour a day, fund my publishing company with somewhere between 5 and 7 books a year is what my goal is to be able to publish. And that's just because I don't want to put more personal time into that.
That's really cool. So you're going to be sponsoring other writers and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's your why.
Quick, Simon quick foray off to the thing. A lot of publishing is going to self-publishing right now, or hybrid publishing, where you might be able to pay somebody 10 grand and they'll facilitate helping to publish the book for you. I want to be able to sponsor those authors. So to be able to put about 10 grand per book into the publication and the marketing so that they don't have to come up with that money up front. And then we'll split royalties until I pay myself back or my company back, which, by the way, of course, I set up through Anderson. But
I like that.
But once I pay myself back for that, then I can fund another book.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. 2 in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
So you ended up in futures, and this isn't this is the best thing in the world to do. But it sounds like you went through other companies and you started off doing the stocks and options. And then did you go to other educational companies as well?
I did. And I will tell you that I've done a lot. I've probably done too many, because instead of just picking a system and going with it, I went to a number. Probably the most extensive training that I got was through a company called Online Trading Academy. Sam Snyden is kind of the lead guru there.
That's where you're there and they actually have physical locations. You're going in there and you're trading all day, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a hybrid. I mean, you'll go to, let's say, a 40-hour class where you'll be in class all week. But then they also have continuing education sessions online and actually live trading education sessions online where you're watching the markets, analyzing it together and things like that. So that was a very, very good education to build on top of what I had already gotten from David Mitchell and his group.
And what else? What other ones? Because Online Trading Academy, they're not a big futures company, are they?
They do a core strategy that, because all of their trading is based on price action and technical analysis price action. So they do a core strategy, and then you can branch off into options, futures, Forex, or just kind of longer term investing and trading. So I did learn futures from them, and that's where I was introduced to the futures markets through them. But then I've done, I can't tell you how many very good Marquez courses. I've taken her courses. And again, she's essentially doing price action analysis and then overlaying some option strategies on top of that.
She's a trend trader. Like, again, she works with us at the Infinity side. I've known her. She was a roommate of one of our lawyers. And again, this is going to sound sad, but I think that was in 99, 2000. Yeah, she really did extraordinarily well during that stretch. I still remember the days of Qualcomm going up. I forget how many hundreds of dollars at the end of the year, but it really did well for people that knew how to trend trade. And of course, they tend to give a little bit of it back when it goes the other way. You got to learn how to trade that bear market just as
well.
You
can actually make more money faster in a bear market than you can in a bull market, because a bull market tends
wild
to stair step up.
Mm-hmm.
We say that in trading or in the markets take the stairs up and the elevator down.
Yeah.
So if you know how to trade puts on the downside, or if you're in futures and you're just selling contracts rather than buying them, you can make a lot of money going down, but it's a little riskier.
Yeah, well, so we used to have guys that would do naked puts. And if you're not a trader out there, that just means that somebody can make you buy the stock at a certain price. And so if the stock's at $100 and you sell puts at 50, that means the stock has to go down to $50 before you're forced to buy it. And if it tanks below it, goes down to $30, you still have to buy, you still have to pay 50. And that's where you can lose your lunch money. And I'll be danged, I watched the market crash twice where these guys just got taken out and back and beaten with a stick. It was pretty extraordinary to watch, because they were just, you get the free money. When you sell a put, you're getting the money. You get to keep it. Did you do any of that stuff?
So I actually hate to admit it, but right now, two strategies that I do, in addition to my core strategy, it's just something that I kind of play with, but I do sell naked puts on stocks, but I also sell naked puts on crude oil futures.
Ah, explain that one. I want to hear that one. I don't know how to do any of that. I'm just curious.
Yeah. So I was going to say, if you want to pick probably the riskiest thing other than maybe VIX or something like that. Yeah, crude oil. It moves, and it's obviously moves a lot with geopolitics and things like that. But essentially, there are a few futures contracts, instruments that you can trade options on. Most of them aren't very liquid, but crude oil is very liquid. And so it works just like selling a naked put on a stock. The only difference is in the futures markets, you run things based on margins. So your futures contract is already levered at about 10 to 1. And then if you're selling an option on top of that, there's a lot more additional leverage. And the margin requirements fluctuate daily based on the price movements of the underlying. So the key thing with selling naked puts is adjustments. If you just buy it and you think you're going to hold it to expiration and win, yeah, occasionally that might work.
you sell it and you buy it back when you buy it back when it's, yeah.
Yeah. So you got to do rollouts, or you got to turn it into an iron condor, or you got to do something to adjust it when it gets down to a certain percentage of a loss, or just take the percentage loss and get off the table.
What's your percentage loss that you're willing to take?
On selling puts, I'm willing to take a 25% loss. I take usually 10% gains and run a... Part of the reason that I still do that is because it's one of the strategies that you can still run a very high batting average on, right? So I can get an 80% success ratio, but you got to have that win to loss ratio, right?
Or let's explain this, because not everybody's an investor that listens to this podcast, but it's kind of fun. So some of these guys, a lot of these guys are just real estate investors, right? So explain options to a real estate investor so that they get it.
Well, first of all, the distinction between investing and trading in real estate terms is the difference between owning rental real estate, right? And that's investing. You buy some dividend paying stocks, right? And trading is more like doing flips.
Yep.
So you just don't go out and try to do a flip unless you know what you're doing and you got a good team with you and all that kind of stuff, right? You know the markets, you know how much it's going to be worth after you do it, and you have some background on doing the construction and all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference between investing and trading. In real estate terms, an option is very similar to putting down a purchase contract on a house. You may put down some earnest money on a house. Say you put down $1,000 to secure the property. That means you have the option to purchase that property at a given price, right? You've already set that price. This is strike price, but it expires at a certain date. You know, that that might be good for 2 months or something like that. Well, if something happens in the market, the bottom falls out of the market, all of a sudden that house now is worth 10, 20% less. Well, that'd be a big move. But anyway,
say so, no.
Yeah, a significant amount less than what you...
Yeah, we saw that happen here in Vegas. We saw 75%. Shrink in about a year.
Yeah. So in that case, you wouldn't exercise your option, right? You just take the hit. You'd let them keep the earnest money and then you move on. But on the flip side, if something happens, you know, somebody comes in and announces a new development project in the area or something like that, that's going to cause real estate values to rise. If that house rises up 10% or 15%, you've already locked it in at that price.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either exercise your option, purchase the property, and then just own that property, or you can sell your option to somebody else. And that's usually what options traders do. Very seldom do you hold an option to expiration unless you've sold the options that bought the option.
And in the market, you have options that you can buy that are for a week. Some of them are a month. Some of them are a year. Some of them go out 2 years. It's called a leap.
Yep.
And so you can buy or sell. So if you own the stock, I suppose you could do this without owning the stock. You're selling a naked call, but
naked call, naked puts.
That's when you say naked, we're just talking about that you don't own the underlying security. So if you are selling puts and it's naked puts, it means you don't own the company, but someone can make you buy it at a certain price. So I could, so let's go through a scenario, Brian. Let's say that I am an investor out there and I'm looking to, and I go to you and I say, hey, Microsoft's at 120 or something like that. And hey, would you sell me the right to make you buy it at $100? And then how much would I have to give you to make you do that?
Yeah. And that's where, when I said options can get kind of complex. If options were just based on strike price and expiration, it'd be a little bit easier, but it's also the price of those options fluctuates with market volatility.
And time. Absolutely.
So it decreases in value over time. And that's really the purpose of options. The purpose of options is really insurance. Mm-hmm. So the other analogy that you can make, if you will, is an insurance premium. People that own a very large stock position, a lot of times they're concerned about, well, what if the market tanks and goes down? Well, you can buy put options, which means that the put option is going to increase in value as the market goes down. So just to kind of cover the value of your portfolio. That way, you might take a little bit of a hit, but you know your option is going to give you a little bit more. And it's levered, right? So it's about 10 to 1 leverage or something like that. So anyway, that's why 85% of options expire worthless. Why selling covered calls is probably the safest. You can do that in a retirement account. because it's one of the safest trading activities that you can make with options, because it's covered. You've got the underlying security. You're the one that's selling that contract on the house, but you're selling it at a price that's so high that most people are going to go, well, I'm not going to exercise that option and buy that house because the house would be worth less than what I owe on it. So I'm just going to let it expire and you can keep your insurance premium for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So for folks that aren't used to the securities market, let's say you have a company like, I'm just going to use, let's see, Microsoft, just because it was in my backyard for a long time. So let's say you have Microsoft and you own it. I don't know what it is today, but let's just say it's around $120. So what you would do if you owned Microsoft is you would sell somebody the right to buy it from you at a certain price. So logical, you probably wouldn't sell them the right to buy it at less than what you paid for it, unless they were giving you a lot of money. Right?
Or unless you were really sure that it was going to go down in value for some reason, right? So if the strike, so if it's trading at 100, you might sell them the option to buy it at 120, right? Mm-hmm. And if it goes up to 120,
you get called out. Yay.
You get called out, but you keep that insurance premium money that they gave you to begin with, right? Mm-hmm. And so you haven't really lost anything. What you've lost is you could have sold it at 120, but you sold it to them at 100, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the strike. Well, I'm sorry, the other way around. Because that was the strike price, right?
But, well, let's walk through that scenario. So yeah. So let's say I own Microsoft at, or any company. We'll just call it company A at $100. And I sell to Brian a six-month option to buy it at 110. That means he can buy it from me at 110. So if it goes up to $120, how much do I get? I get the $110 and I get whatever I charged him for that option.
Yeah. So you haven't lost money there. You've only had a little bit of an opportunity cost, because if you had just not sold the option and kept it and held it, today you could have sold it at 120.
And what Brian makes is he makes that spread. He paid, let's say, a dollar for the option, and now it's worth 120. So he made $9 off of a dollar. So he made an exponential return. And that's why people are very, very geared towards the option market, because when it rains, it pours. I mean, it absolutely just, the money dumps out of the sky, but the same token goes in reverse too. When it takes a piece out of you, it takes everything.
Yeah. So when you're buying options, you're hoping that it's going to move in a certain direction. You're convinced you're going to buy calls because you're convinced that the market's going to go up. So you're going to be able to exercise those options at $100 to get something worth 120. And, you know, then you can trade it out for the value and get that big move.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned, all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
Did you go through any courses where you were like, this is absolute garbage, everybody here is going to lose their money?
Again, because I know in advance that only 5% of traders are successful, most of the people aren't going to have the account value to be able to suffer the losses that they're going to take in live trading. Regardless of how much paper trading you do, you get the mechanics down of paper trading, but you don't fix the problems here. So every class I sit in, I can look around and I can go, most of the people here are not going to be successful with this. The things that can make you successful at trading is, number one, recognize that you need essentially a college level education. So you really need to commit the time to do this, say 8 hours a day or so for 2, 3, 4 years.
That's trading. This is the people that are playing. I always equate it to basketball or something like that. If you're gonna go out there and play one-on-one with Kobe or James, you better have your game on, because you're going head-to-head with very, very good players. If you're timing the market, you're going head-to-head with some very, very good players.
Yeah, you're going head-to-head with this really bad player that's you.
You too, yeah.
You're
head faked on your own. They don't have to do anything.
Yeah, so, and it is trading, but like I said, said, you put the time into it and you have an account balance because it's going to allow you to take some pretty good losses in the meantime, you'll eventually learn. So the people that win stick with it. They find a trading system that they can back test and they can prove has proven results. And then the other probably absolute key thing is to have an active mentor or some kind of active mentorship program where you're able to go in, assess your trades with people, and they can say, well, hey, look, you did everything right on this one, but the market just didn't do what you thought it was. You took your loss at the stop and you're just fine. You know, so this is a win, even though you lost some money on it. Or they can look at it and go, well, your trading rules said to do this and you did this instead. Why? Mm-hmm. You know, and so talk you through that. So those kinds of things are helpful in making you a profitable trader. And again, I do want to distinguish a little bit between that covered call thing is a very, very safe trading mechanism. It's something that you can do to kind of juice the returns that you're going to get off of buy and hold stocks. But in investing, you're probably better off putting in about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours a year investing. Build your portfolio of good, solid, dividend-paying stocks, the boring ones, and then check them once a year to make sure that they're not going to do the GE thing on you, right? They're not going to all of a sudden...
You could put a rolling stop on there, right? You could just say, hey, here's as much I'm willing to let it go down and I'll sell it.
And if you've held it for very long, right, you're not going to actually suffer a loss on it because the dividend income will have paid for your cost basis in the stock, right? So, you know, that kind of thing where you're reassessing your portfolio about once a year, you've got a good portfolio of maybe, say, as little as 20, you know, 10 to 20 good, solid dividend paying stocks in a couple different industry sectors. And you can make very, 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 very good returns over a long period of time.
It's getting rich slow. You're an investor. You just got to be patient. Some people aren't patient.
Well, and it's ideally, if you are going to trade, your purpose in trading, you're never going to trade with your whole investment.
Oh, that's your risk capital.
That would be absolutely stupid because you've got a good possibility of losing all of that. But to go back to the real estate analogy, you're going to do some flips. Your purpose in doing the flips is to generate some money so that you can buy some long-term hold rental property that's going to generate those consistent returns, you know, that income on a regular basis.
And we'll say one thing is you can trade very safely if you own the underlying security. The part where I see people get blown up is when they're just going and buying and selling the option. But if you own some stock, you can sell the option, buy it right back. And you can be, I have clients that do that several times a day. They sell it, they buy it back, they sell it, they buy it back. But in any case, even if they were called out, they would still make money. Again, it's the idea of owning the company A at $100 and they're selling 105 options when, you know, when it looks like it's going up. And then when it starts to pull back, then you buy it back as it goes down in price. When it looks like it's going back up, and you can still trade those trends. I know Mark Kay does a good job at it. There's a lot of folks out there that are very good at seeing that. And I've had one client who makes strong seven figures just doing that over and over. But he goes crazy. He'll do it over and over and over and over, like tiny little increments, paying very little in the fees for the transactions, but he's making lots of small transactions.
Yeah, and that's the covered call strategy. So that's very safe. And again, it's so safe that the government will allow you, regulations will allow you to do that in a retirement account because they realize you can't really blow it up and lose a ton of money. You can lose a little bit. If you get called out when the value of your underlying has gone below your cost basis, but you're still, again, you're not going to lose a ton of money there.
It's tough to lose it. The company itself can drop. You know, like you could have the GE and it drops. And if you haven't sold it, you haven't lost the money. You know, so the old adage is you just hold on to it long enough. And if it's a profitable company and there's ways to look for profits, you know, where the company is actually solvent without investor activity, like the company still makes money and it pays out as opposed to just sucking money in. And there's easy ways to figure that one out. As long as it's paying you something, then it's kind of like a rental property. I don't want to know what my rental properties are worth because I might be tempted to sell them. I just assume have that rent coming in every month. But that's not nearly as much fun as what you're doing in the futures, and you're making this money. So you ended up doing futures. give me an idea of what you do on a, of what it is that you're actually trading.
Yeah. And so for example, right now today I have a position in on the Nikkei. I've got a buy position. So a long position in on the Nikkei. I've got short positions on Brent crude and heating oil. I've got a long position in cocoa, but again, this is all technical analysis. And so that's part of why there's an education piece to it, is you're looking at the price action, you're recognizing things. And another problem that I had, psychological problem that I had early, it really bugged me if I wasn't getting in like at the absolute bottom and selling at the absolute top, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get that down to where I could be right to those levels. And so a lot of times I was missing out on profits that I could have taken and didn't. Mm-hmm. The thing I've discovered now, so I do follow a trend trading strategy, but mm-hmm. I'm not trying to pick the bottom. I'm not trying to pick the top. I'm trying to pick the 60 to 70% of the meat in the middle of the move. That's and perfect. If I can get, you know, even 50% of that, then I'll do that. And it's also a system, like I said, I put my buy orders in. Once that triggers and I'm in a position, mm-hmm. I will always have a stop out order in place. And then I use what's called trailing stops or whatever, and I'll move those up based on the price action of the underlying. I'll move those up until the point that I become, you know, at least break.
In a trailing stop, it's just if it tanks, there's already a sell order in. That's usually what caused the market to go crazy. When something starts, you start triggering all these algorithms, these computers, and all of a sudden they start dumping the security. That's when you usually see it take a nice little dump, and then everybody that's watching it comes in and buys it, knowing that, all right, they just dumped it all. You hit their trailing stops. Now we're going to buy it and push it back up again and ride it back up. That's fun stuff.
I don't use automatic trailing stops. I don't let it adjust those automatically. Every day I look at the price action and then I go in and I put in my personal, this is my choice at this level. That's where I want to put my trailing stop. So it's only dealing with like one contract in each one of these things. So the other thing that I like about futures, stocks are, to a certain degree, stocks are a Ponzi scheme. If they're not paying a dividend, if they're a growth stock, it's a Ponzi scheme, because you are counting on the ability to be able to sell your shares to somebody else at some price, whether it went up or down or whatever, right? Options, futures contracts usually go against some kind of commodity. So the purpose of futures was, the guy that's growing corn this year, he's not certain of what price he's going to get corn at, and he doesn't know what the weather is going to do in between. So he will pre-sell his corn at a reasonable price to somebody with a futures contract so that he knows, I'm going to get at least this amount of money for this contract this year. And that's good enough to make him money, the speculators on the other side, or the people that are buying the corn to use it for producing corn oil or tortillas or whatever. They know what price they're going to get, right? So there's real industry behind it. There are people that are trading these contracts, and the speculators essentially just provide some liquidity to oil and the machine. And they're big boy traders that are trading hundreds or thousands of contracts, and I'm just trading one at a time. So I'm just a coattails guy. Right?
That's all right. We'll take the crumbs off of that table any day, as long as it's crumbs and you're not paying onto it.
And so I'm not trading against somebody else, right? In this business, everybody can win. Again, sort of like the options market where you're selling covered calls. If you look at it as insurance, everybody can win, because I paid an insurance premium, but I was happy to pay that premium because I was worried about this thing going haywire. And the guy that sold you the insurance is getting that premium, and so he's happy too.
Yeah, if you think that you're coming towards the end of the year, we get into this on the tax side. That's how I got into the investing, was always from the tax angle. But you're sitting on a lot of gains, and you're worried about what's going to happen at the beginning of the year. You could buy a put, and now you know you could force someone to pay whatever the price is. So if you know, so you can, you don't have to sell the security and take all your money off. You can still protect your downside, and there's some pretty cool vehicles to do it. All right, big question for you, Brian, before we go. If you were talking to 16-year-old Brian now, what would you tell 16-year-old Brian based off of everything you've gone through? 16-year-old Brian says, you know what, I'm thinking about that stock market, or I'm thinking about the futures market. What would you tell him?
It's very simple. If I'm 16, I'd work it up to where I could put every penny I could come up with you know, above living expenses into investing in high quality dividend paying stocks. A quick example, Jeremy Siegel did some back work on the S&P 500 and showed if you had just invested in the original stocks, take the top 20, if you will, of the original S&P 500, you would have outperformed the S&P index by 6 times. If you could put, if you'd have taken the top 4 stocks at the time, and you didn't have to decide, well, which are going to be the best ones, just take the top 4, put $1,000 in each one of them from 1957 to 2003, that $4,000 investment would have been worth over $6 million. If you had put the same $4,000 in the S&P index, it would have been worth a little over $1.2 million. So you're not going to lose either way. Mm-hmm. But if you had just put it into the high quality stocks, held those dividend paying stocks, things that are not overvalued because valuation matters.
Ignore the circus. In other words, ignore the
circus. Put the money in the certain thing, and that's high quality dividend paying stocks that are boring.
Good advice. This is completely aside, but I had that conversation literally last night sitting with someone who had sold his company. He sold his company, get this, to WorldCom. And he sold, and he got some cash, and he had restricted shares. So he's a buddy of mine who's, he lost $138 million when they went, because he had restricted shares when they when they got caught in that fraud. He was like, it was the most valuable company. I never thought in a million years I would have lost this. And so, but then he was laughing, and he says the other mistake wasn't even that. It's he looked at 5 companies that were the tech companies at the time, which was the Google, the Microsoft, Oracle, and a few others. And this was many years ago. And he was looking at it, he says, if I just invested, I was actually going to put a little bit of money into those. And if I had just done that, I would have made back a huge chunk of it already. It's kind of funny. You look at those things. You never know what it's going to do. I always just say, if I'm going to buy something, it better be paying me.
Yeah. Well, and that's, again, the difference between the income and the growth stocks. Mm-hmm. If you could pick Apple, if you could pick Microsoft, if you pick the ones that are going to be the next growth success, then that's a wonderful thing.
There's 3,000 companies.
Right. And if you go, well, I don't know which one it's going to be, so I'm going to buy every IPO this year. Guess what? You're going to underperform the market very significantly. Yep. So I would encourage anybody that's looking at investing, buy Jeremy Siegel's book. You know, you can get it for the ebook for probably $5 or $10. It's called The Future for Investors, Why the Old and True Will Beat the Bold and New.
Or I love it. Or
beat it. I forget what the wording is exactly, but why the tried and true triumph over the bold and new.
I like it. But you're preaching to the choir on that one. I've just watched so many people over the years. We do 6,000 returns plus around here every year. And I look and see who makes money. It's kind of boring. The guys that are boring, they make the most.
Yep.
Kind of fun. Hey, I want to say thank you for coming and sharing with us. I always find these things just fascinating when you see what makes people tick. So I just really appreciate it. I know it wasn't, it's just a little chunk out of your day. But it sounds like you have all your investments already set, so you can just kind of relax anyway.
Yeah, this is play money. This is, if I lose everything, then I may not be able to do the things with the nonprofits that I want to do. But it's, you know, it's the gambling money that you take to Vegas and hope your system is good.
But you love it. That's good. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.